proceed to the fourth case, Sandoval versus the United States. Ms. Chambers?
Your Honors, may it please the Court. My name is Tori Chambers. I was appointed by this Court to represent the appellant, Hector Sandoval, and I am appearing pro bono publico. This case is about the government's failure to comply with a recognized obligation imposed by an international treaty to notify the Mexican consulate that Hector Sandoval, a Mexican national, had been detained. Mr. Sandoval's trial counsel failed to seek any remedy for the government's violation of the Vienna Convention. Even though the government has acknowledged that it failed to comply with the Vienna Convention in Mr. Sandoval's case, the district court dismissed the Vienna Convention claim, finding that it was procedurally barred and finding that Mr. Sandoval did not demonstrate that he suffered any prejudice as a result of these violations. The district court's dismissal was erroneous on both accounts. First, the district court should have considered whether Mr. Sandoval's counsel's ineffective assistance was the reason Mr. Sandoval defaulted this Vienna Convention claim. That would be cause and prejudice to overcome the procedural bar.
Well, what relief could Sandoval have received if his attorney had sought a remedy for the government's violation of the Vienna Convention?
Your Honor, at this point, I would be speculating as to what relief Mr. Sandoval might have received. There are two significant issues with Mr. Sandoval's case that the Mexican consulate could have assisted with. The first issue involves the translation at Mr. Sandoval's trial. It's evident from the trial record, pages 378 to 399, that there was an uncertified Spanish translator whose mistakes negatively impacted Mr. Sandoval's case. Delia Avila, who testified for the defense, spoke only Spanish. That translator interpreted...
Was that issue raised in the first appeal? That the translator was...
Not specifically, Your Honor, but the issue of the Vienna Convention violation was raised.
No, but you're saying now this is a 1999 trial?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, yes.
So we're talking about the accuracy of the transcript in a trial that happened 10 years ago, and our court had the direct appeal in, what was it, 03 or something like that. Was that issue raised?
On the direct appeal, it was.
I'm not talking about the Vienna Convention.
Yes, Your Honor, the translation issue was raised on direct appeal. It was raised under the Court Interpreters Act, which is a slightly different claim than the Vienna Convention.
It was a certification issue.
I'm sorry?
Was it just a certification issue?
Whether the translator was certified, but that...
But you can be a good translator and not be certified.
Yes.
Be certified and be a bad translator.
No, absolutely. That's what this court held. And Mr. Sandoval's counsel on direct appeal did make some claims that there were some poor translation problems and some errors there. The particular errors were that the translator interpreted Ms. Avila's testimony in a third person instead of translating exactly what she said. So it caused some confusion in pronouns and tenses. The translator also made some mistakes in translating the questions. And Ms. Avila's resulting confusion may have made her appear untruthful to the jury. Because she was one of only two witnesses for the defense, her credibility was a major issue in this trial. There is case law demonstrating that the Mexican consulate has provided translation assistance to other Mexican nationals, so it's likely that they would have assisted Mr. Sandoval in this regard. Going back to Judge Williams' question, the second issue of prejudice that the Mexican consulate could have assisted with at Mr. Sandoval's trial involves several Spanish-speaking alibi witnesses that Mr. Sandoval identified who were unable to be located at the time of his trial. And while it is not in the record, Mr. Sandoval has informed me that some of these witnesses were and still are in Mexico. Case law demonstrates that the Mexican consulate has helped other Mexican nationals locate exculpatory witnesses, and the fact that some of these witnesses are in Mexico indicates the consulate might have been especially helpful in this regard. Your Honor, Mr. Sandoval is asking this court for very specific and limited relief today. We're asking to remand this case to the district court for a full and fair review of the Section 2255 petition to determine how Mr. Sandoval's counsel's ineffectiveness may have impacted the default of the Vienna Convention claim, and to allow Mr. Sandoval the opportunity to investigate and present facts related to the prejudice he suffered as a result of the loss of his Vienna Convention
rights. So you're asking us on this certificate of appealability to go further than what Judge Ripple had envisioned in the original grant?
Yes, Your Honor. I just talked about the first error of the district court, not allowing Mr. Sandoval to present this evidence regarding prejudice. I'd like now to turn to the second reason that the district court erred in dismissing Mr. Sandoval's Vienna Convention claim. It held that it was procedurally barred. While the procedural rules do apply to direct Vienna Convention claims, when a procedural default is the result of counsel's ineffectiveness, there may be cause and prejudice to overcome a procedural bar under the Osagedy case. With regard to cause, Mr. Sandoval's failure to raise the Vienna Convention violations before, during, or after his trial is a result of his counsel's ineffectiveness. The district court should have considered whether counsel's ineffectiveness was the cause of the procedural bar to Mr. Sandoval's Vienna Convention claim before dismissing it as procedurally barred. In his pro se petition, Mr. Sandoval did allege that his Vienna Convention rights were violated, and immediately after that claim, he alleged that his counsel was ineffective. The district court should have liberally construed Mr. Sandoval's pro se petition to address whether counsel's ineffectiveness was the cause of the failure to raise Vienna Convention claims. There is abundant case law in this court on liberal construction. In addition, Mr. Sandoval's trial counsel's failure to enforce the Vienna Convention constituted deficient performance. The first prong of the Strickland test is met in this case. Mr. Sandoval's trial counsel's performance was objectively unreasonable. He should have known about and advocated for Mr. Sandoval's Vienna Convention rights. Like the trial counsel in the Osagedy case, there was no strategic reason for Mr. Sandoval's trial counsel not to pursue a Vienna Convention remedy. As it did in Osagedy, this court should remand the case to the district court with instructions to permit Mr. Sandoval to show evidence demonstrating prejudice as a result of his counsel's deficient performance in failing to enforce the Vienna Convention. Mr. Sandoval's trial counsel also provided ineffective assistance of counsel when he introduced evidence from an unrelated trial that established that Mr. Sandoval was part of a group of men who kidnapped the victim in Iowa and held him with weapons against his will for 2 days while traveling to Chicago. This harmful evidence directly contradicted Mr. Sandoval's alibi that when he was arrested, he was simply visiting his young cousins, but had unwittingly put himself in the wrong place at the wrong time and had no knowledge of or involvement in the alleged crimes. Defense counsel had every indication that the government was not going to introduce any evidence that Mr. Sandoval was present at the inception of the crime in Iowa. Indeed, both the government and the trial judge acknowledged on the record that it was odd and bizarre that Mr. Sandoval's defense counsel introduced this incriminating evidence against his own client. This harmful evidence that Mr. Sandoval was present in Iowa significantly altered the mix of information on which the jury relied to establish his guilt. The district court dismissed Mr. Sandoval's ineffective assistance of counsel claim in error because it relied only on the pro se filings and failed to examine pertinent parts of the trial record for evidence of ineffective assistance of counsel. Mr. Sandoval is entitled to a full and fair consideration of his Section 2255 petition and respectfully requests that this court remand this case to the district court with instructions to fully and fairly consider the petition, addressing in particular the issues Mr. Sandoval has raised in this appeal. If the court has no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Very good. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Ms. Mullen.
May it please the court, Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. As we view this case, there are really two separate issues that were certified by this court, arguably. And the analysis of those two issues overlaps a little bit because both of them end up forcing an analysis of ineffective assistance of counsel. And so we're going to try to separate those two out in our argument here today. The first one, of course, is whether or not the district court erred in finding that Mr. Sandoval procedurally defaulted his Vienna Convention claim. Mr. Sandoval concedes that he did not raise the claim at trial, did not raise it on appeal. He also concedes that Vienna Convention claims can be procedurally defaulted, as he must, since the Supreme Court has said that repeatedly. Mr. Sandoval argues that the district court should have somehow construed his 2255, the direct Vienna Convention argument in there, to assert cause and prejudice to excuse the procedural default. And we agree that there are times when ineffective assistance of counsel can excuse a procedural default in a case, can provide the cause. But the problem here is that Mr. Sandoval never made that argument to the district court. This is not a situation where in his 2255, with respect to that issue, he said, district court, you need to understand the cause for my failure to raise this was my counsel's ineffectiveness, nor did he assert sufficient prejudice. All Mr. Sandoval said in that pleading was, had the government informed me of my rights under the Vienna Convention, there is a reasonable probability that the Mexican consulate would have helped me at my trial.
Well, like you said, he did raise ineffective assistance of counsel. He alleged the Article 36 violation, and, of course, the rule favors liberal construction, especially when you've got pro ses like he was. Why isn't that enough to allow his ineffective assistance claim as to his attorney not seeking a remedy under Article 36?
Fair enough. So we'll get to that issue, which is the separate issue of whether or not the pleading sufficiently raised an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, which we know from this court in Osagady, and I'm probably butchering that pronunciation, but is an appropriate vehicle for raising that claim. What Mr. Sandoval did, of course, was raise the direct Vienna Convention claim in the 2255 and then raised a separate claim of ineffective assistance of counsel, focusing on a number of different issues. So we know that he knew how to raise an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, did not do that with respect to the Vienna Convention claim. As we argue in our brief, there's a big difference between liberal construction, which we agree district courts are to do when they look at uncounseled 2255s, and complete construction. There was no argument here at all. This is not like Osagady's case where there was an inartful stab at the argument. This court made clear in Osagady, of course the defendant has to assert the basic framework of the argument, the bones of the argument, the structure of the argument. But if there's a misstep here and there, a technicality in Osagady's case, he chose the wrong remedy, we'll overlook that. This is a very different situation. This is a question about whether or not a district court faced with no argument at all, is required as a matter of law to reach out and construct that argument for the defendant. But let's say for the sake of argument that the district court should have done that, should have liberally construed this to be an argument from Mr. Sandoval that his counsel was ineffective in this case. The problem that Mr. Sandoval has is he still can't clear the prejudice hurdle. This, again, is very different from Osagady, where this court was concerned about the prejudice that was obvious from the trial transcript itself and the sentencing transcript. And things jumped out at the court in terms of different ways that the Nigerian consulate might have been able to assist Mr. Osagady. And those factors are completely missing from this case.
Sandoval says the district court could not have reviewed the criminal trial record because it wasn't made part of the civil record, and that's not a point you addressed in your brief. What's your response to his argument that once he cited to the trial record in the pro se submission, the court was obliged to review the pertinent parts of the record?
I actually looked into that because that raised some questions with me about the procedure and the way the district court works through these things. We know that the district court, of course, had all of the trial transcripts because they were ordered for the direct appeal that occurred first. So we called the clerk's office to see what happens after the transcripts come back down to this court and then a 2255 is filed. The court retains those transcripts, uses those transcripts with respect to the civil case, with respect to the 2255, and in fact those transcripts are still in the clerk's office now. So I think that, you know, that could be an issue. But
that wasn't the trial court never referred to it specifically.
I don't think that the trial court referred to specific pages of the transcript, but certainly had a working understanding of, you know, sat through the trial and had a working understanding of what happened there. So I don't think that's a real concern in this case. The rule requires the court to ask for portions of the transcript if those records are not available to the court. And we don't have any reason to believe in this case that those records were not available to the court. But I'd like to return for a minute to just this issue of prejudice. It's clear from this court's decision in Asagedi, where this court, I think, provided a little bit of a blueprint for defendants when they're asserting these sorts of claims, the kinds of things that they need to say in their pleadings in order to even trigger a hearing. And none of those things are present here. The defendant here did not say, I would have benefited from, in a specific way, I would have benefited from the assistance of the Mexican consulate. Here's what happened in my case. Here's what the Mexican consulate could have done for me and would have done for me. That's another significant piece of information here that's missing, is we don't have any information whatsoever that the Mexican consulate was poised to give Mr. Sandoval the kind of services that he hasn't identified that he even needed here. So we have a complete lack of prejudice. He was represented at trial by an attorney I know you're all familiar with, George Tassif, who is an extraordinarily experienced attorney with over 20 years of federal criminal trial experience. He was assisted by an interpreter. So there's really nothing on this record, just viewing this record, that should lead this court to be concerned about whether or not there was prejudice. But there's certainly not enough here to lead to the conclusion that the district court erred in first of all, not liberally construing this to include the claim, but then in holding a hearing when the defendant simply hasn't come forward with enough to trigger a hearing.
And what about this testimony, this contradictory testimony that contradicted the defense theory?
And again, we didn't brief that because that was outside of the certificate that was issued by this court, but I think that had we briefed it and had we addressed that issue, it's one of those situations where you've got a government witness and Mr. Tassif is looking to poke holes in his story and brings out an inconsistency. And yes, arguably the story that he gave before was more damning to the defendant, more prejudicial to the defendant than what he ultimately said at that trial. Sometimes defense counsel makes those sort of strategic decisions that they're going to bring out an inconsistency, because the point is not that the former story was the accurate one. That was never what Mr. Tassif argued. It was that this witness cannot be believed. And when he had very little else to work with, my guess, although I have not addressed that issue with Mr. Tassif, is that as a matter of strategy, he chose to go ahead and impeach him with that. I don't think there's anything on the face of that screams ineffective assistance of counsel.
Although it was kind of the comments by the trial court and by the government counsel talked about how bizarre it was.
Actually, you know, as government counsel, I've had that reaction in other cases where Mr. Tassif has chosen to do that. But that doesn't mean that I would have made that decision. But I think it also doesn't mean that, as a matter of law, that falls below the standard of competence. I think that when, you know, we're not sitting in his shoes, and when he's looking at his case and there's very little else that he can do, that's certainly a legitimate trial strategy for him to employ. If the court has no further questions, I'll return the balance of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. Ms. Chambers.
Your Honors, with respect to Judge Williams' concern, it is uncontroverted that the trial court did not have the criminal transcripts included in the civil case. In fact, we had to spend months motioning the district court in this case to put the criminal transcript into the civil case. In addition, even though it was the same judge, the trial took place 5 years before the habeas appeal. So with respect to the liberal construction argument, all of the building blocks of the claim that Mr. Sandoval's counsel was ineffective for failing to enforce the Vienna Convention were present in the pro se petition. Mr. Sandoval, who does not speak English and has only 5 years of education, had to rely on a fellow prisoner to draft his petition for him. However, The Vienna Convention claim was right next to the ineffective assistance of counsel claim in the petition. Mr. Sandoval knew that his Vienna Convention rights were violated. He simply blamed the wrong responsible party for this stage of the appeal. He blamed the government instead of blaming his lawyer.
Getting back to the transcript, so was the motion was never granted to make it part of the civil record?
It was finally, Your Honor.
Because it was granted.
Yes.
Right. I just wanted to be clear on that.
Yes.
So it was in the record.
It became part of the record a few months ago before we filed this appeal.
So, but what I'm saying is it wasn't part of the record when the district court reviewed, made the decision.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I had the timing right.
Thank you. Second, with respect to the prejudice argument, the two primary elements of prejudice are both in that record, one being the problem with translation, two being the alibi witnesses. The defense in this trial was really all about the alibi. And at the time of trial, they only had Mr. Sandoval and one other person as a witness. That one person's credibility was in question because of translation problems. Had Mr. Sandoval been able to find these additional alibi witnesses to support his alibi, which in fact was not contradicted by any of the defense witnesses other than the victim, who had a history of drug dealing, felonies, and some other major problems, there's a pretty good chance that maybe the jury would have believed this alibi had it heard evidence from more people. And there's a very good chance that the Mexican consulate could and would have assisted Mr. Sandoval. In fact, the Mexican consulate has been tremendously active in helping its detained citizens. There are a number of different cases. Sanchez Lamas, a Supreme Court case, talks about how the Mexican consulate helped its citizens gather evidence. Avena, a case in the International Court of Justice, is a case where the Mexican consulate sued this country on behalf of its citizens for Vienna Convention violations and talked in great detail about all the different kinds of assistance that it could and would give its citizens in this situation.
Well, specifically here, Ms. Chambers, what can you think of one or two things that the consulate could do in regard to the defense?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The consulate may have provided additional assistance in translation, perhaps a certified translator or a translator.
Well, does the record indicate at all difficulty with during the trial, that is, a problem with translation?
Yes. And you'll see in the record there's a sidebar discussion, pages 378 to 399, arguing about problems in the translation. Because Mr. Sandoval had his own Spanish-English translator, and because there was a translator for the witness, those translators got into an argument with each other over the translation problems. And that's all in the record there. In addition, Mr. Sandoval identified these Spanish-speaking witnesses, some of whom are in Mexico, that could not be located at the time of his trial. And I think the Mexican consulate could have been especially helpful and maybe could have located those people. Again, we would need to go back down to the district court and eventually get an evidentiary hearing to prove whether or not that's actually the case.
Do you know how, if the record tells us, how often Mexican embassy gets even marginally involved in cases after they've been notified?
I don't have any statistics.
Because there's a lot of Mexican citizens who are indicted in American courtrooms. And I think it's more common now to notify people of their Vienna Convention rights, although whether that percolates down to the local sheriff in rural Illinois or something, we don't know. But
sure.
I don't think there are very many times, if at all, that the Mexican embassy or any foreign embassy gets involved in these sorts of things.
Your Honor, I don't have that information, but all we're asking for at this point is an opportunity to go back to the district court to offer evidence about that information.
But a lot of your argument is that the embassy could have done this, could have done that to assist Mr. Sandoval. mean, all three of the judges on this panel have been trial judges, and I don't recall the Mexican embassy ever getting involved in these kinds of cases.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I admit I am speculating as to what the Mexican consulate could and would have done, but my speculations are based on reading the case law where the Mexican consulate has assisted other detainees. And in this case, we're simply asking for a remand so that we can go to the district court and gather evidence from the Mexican consulate in an effort to prove that they could and would have helped Mr. Sandoval in this case.
This trial occurred in Peoria, I
believe. In the Central District, yes.
In Peoria, and I don't know that the Mexican consulate has even a presence in Peoria.
I'm not certain of that at this point, Your Honor, either. And I notice that my time is up. If there are no more questions, I ask respectfully that you remand this case to the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. Ms. Mullen.